You are doing a spectacular job. Your people are doing a spectacular job.
President Trump arrives in Manila for the final stop of his Asia visit. It's Monday, November 13th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Asia looks to free trade without the United States. A survey of Rohingya finds acute needs. American beef heads to China, explaining autism to kids, climate change affecting water. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump landed in Manila Sunday for summits with eager but suspicious Southeast Asian leaders. Trump's Air Force One reached Manila shortly before 6 p.m. local time after about 3,500 Filipino protesters tried to march on the U.S. embassy. The protesters shouted for Trump to leave and accused the U.S. government, a former Philippine colonizer of about 50 years, of looking for overseas wars. Thousands of riot police blocked protesters who were organized in part by a minor left-leaning political party from reaching the embassy or any venues where Trump is scheduled to attend summits organized by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations through Tuesday. Before arriving in Manila, Trump met in Hanoi with Vietnamese President Tran Đại Quang, and afterwards, Trump praised Vietnam for recently becoming the fastest-growing export market to the United States.
We have come a long way, the United States and Vietnam. We've seen it from both sides of the picture, and this is the pleasant side. You are doing a spectacular job. Your people are doing a spectacular job, and in the United States, likewise.
He is confident that the American energy, agriculture, financial services, aviation, digital commerce, and defense products are able to meet all of Vietnam's many commercial needs and meet those needs better than anybody else. En route to Hanoi aboard Air Force One, Trump reiterated to reporters traveling with him that he discussed with APEC leaders bilateral agreements that have resulted in trade imbalances he says are disadvantageous to the United States. Trump and Quang also discussed North Korea and the South China Sea. Trump repeated his warning that North Korea represents a major threat to peace and stability in the region.
Safety and security are goals that should unite all civilized nations. We want progress, not provocation. I mean, we have been provoked. The world has been provoked. We don't want that. We want stability, not chaos. And we want peace, not war.
During his bilateral meeting with Quang, Trump also offered his services as a mediator for the South China Sea dispute. And when asked about the offer at a press conference, Quang would only say that Vietnam seeks a peaceful resolution to the issue through negotiations and in line with international law. Prior to his arrival in Hanoi, Trump was in the central Vietnamese city of Da Nang, where he attended the annual Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. On Friday, Trump and his Chinese counterpart, President Xi Jinping, offered starkly contrasting views of the direction of trade in Asia in separate speeches to regional business leaders. Trump told the APEC CEO summit that he is willing to make bilateral trade agreements with any country in the Indo-Pacific region, but he firmly rejected multinational deals, such as the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was quickly abandoned in the first days of his administration. President Xi embraced the multilateral concept, in particular calling for support for a free trade area of the Asia-Pacific, which would harmonize regional and bilateral economic pacts. China was left out of the TPP, which had been led by the United States and Japan, and was meant in great part as a bulwark against China's strategic ambitions. Now in Manila, Trump joined 17 other heads of state for discussions likely to cover North Korea, the South China Sea, and terrorism from a Southeast Asian angle. Many hope Trump will offer stronger trade and security ties to Southeast Asia, but doubt he will announce deliverables this week. Stay with VOA Asia as we look at the evolving trade story in Asia as nations seek to move forward on a free trade deal without the United States. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea slams Trump for trying to halt its nuclear missile programs. Xi tells Duterte China will work to safeguard South China Sea peace. Exhibition details indigenous massacres in Australia. Rohingya refugee finds identity helping others resettle. Cambodian netizens face new risks as government tightens online controls. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Countries in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal, or TPP, are moving ahead without the United States. The agreement for it is a boost for the principle of multilateral trade pacts after U.S. President Donald Trump ditched the TPP early this year in favor of a, quote, America First policy he believes would save U.S. jobs. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Dr. William Hawk, associate professor at the Darla Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina, about who stands where on the issue.
Well, right now it's pretty much all of the other original TPP countries against the United States. This is something they had worked on for a very long time, I mean, dating back to 6-7 years worth of negotiations. And really when President Trump pulled us out of the TPP arrangement really on his first full day in office, that really left a lot of these countries who had been negotiating for a long time hanging.
So where does this stand? In a speech in Da Nang, President Trump, as I'm sure you heard, sent out a very strong message that he was only interested in bilateral deals in Asia and that would not disadvantage the United States. And at the same time, or just a while later, the Chinese President Xi Jinping told the same forum to stress multilateralism, and he said globalization was an irreversible trend. Is that basically the crux of the argument here?
I think that really is a big part of it. Is really, I think what the Trump administration would like to do is negotiate with countries one-on-one as much as possible. However, this would go against the multilateral framework that the TPP was trying to set up in the Pacific Rim. Now, with the United States withdrawing, the remaining countries are trying to make a go of it on their own. But sitting on the sidelines is China, who would really like to have a multilateral framework that they're at the center at. And I think, you know, that's really the big geopolitical issue going forward, is can China step into this vacuum created by the U.S. withdrawal from the TPP?
Is that a danger as far as you're concerned, as far as the United States is concerned?
Well, it's a problem both on an economic and a political front. I think one of the biggest political issues in Asia going forward is, how do we manage the rise of China, which is now becoming a major player on the world stage and would like to be the predominant power in Asia? The question is then, can the United States set up a multilateral framework to have a system of alliances and trading partnerships and so forth that would make sure that the U.S. is still a major player in Asia? And that's really a big part of what the TPP was designed to do. The Trump administration may have some luck negotiating bilateral trade deals, but I think there's going to be sort of a bad taste in their mouth amongst a lot of potential partners in that as a result of the U.S. withdrawal from TPP.
President Trump's campaign pledge was that this was costing jobs and pulling out would mean more jobs for Americans. Does that translate as far as economics are concerned?
That's really a difficult thing to say. Certainly, we see that U.S. manufacturing sector, especially the more labor-intensive parts of U.S. manufacturing, have been squeezed in the last few decades. But that has as much to do with changing changing technology as much as with trade. And even on the trade front, I don't think it's been trade agreements so much that have undermined American businesses as the fact that the U.S. is I think the U.S. dollar is very, very strong against, relative to a lot of Asian currencies. And I think the currency issue is really the bigger one, which is usually outside the scope of trade agreements.
as you followed this story, Japan has been lobbying hard for the TPP. The TPP aims to eliminate tariffs on industrial and farm products across the bloc. What does the U.S. absence from the TPP mean on an overall scale for both the United States and Asian countries, including China?
Well, I think without the U.S. being a part of the TPP, part of what a lot of countries were hoping to get out of it, better access to the U.S. market, is off the table to a certain extent. Now, the flip side of that is that if the remaining members of the TPP bloc form a trade agreement amongst themselves that lower trade barriers and make it easier for goods and investment to flow across their borders, that'll also keep U.S. firms out of what would still be a pretty large trading bloc, even without the United States in it. And then, of course, you know, the issue is, can China, by virtue of being the next largest market out there, can they end up negotiating with the remaining TPP members to get an advantage in those markets? I think that's really what could potentially be harmful to the United States down the road.
Dr. William Hawk is associate professor at the Darla Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. Dr. Hawk, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Happening now in Asia, a new report on Australia's sexual health says rates of new gonorrhea diagnoses in the country rose 63% in just 5 years. Australian health experts urge the need for people to be more aware of the infection, as the reasons behind the trend are not yet fully understood. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today. A survey conducted by the UN Refugee Agency of more than 500,000 Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh finds one-third are vulnerable and in need of special assistance. The UN says more than 611,000 Rohingya refugees have arrived from Myanmar since August 25th. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The undertaking took place in the Kutupalong camp, in numerous makeshift settlements and extension areas in Cox's Bazar. It was conducted jointly by the UN Refugee Agency and Bangladesh's Relief and Repatriation Commission. The UNHCR reports more than 100 people were hired to go shelter to shelter to gather data on more than 120,000 families comprising nearly 518,000 refugees. The agency's spokeswoman, Dunia Aslam Khan, says most of the earliest new arrivals in Bangladesh were women and children. She tells VOA it was decided to conduct this survey to assess their vulnerability and see what help was most needed.
And according to the data so far collected, we have a number of households headed by single mothers without any male support. We have younger children who are now taking care of their sibling. We have elderly grandparents who have no support from younger family members because they are either killed or separated.
Khan says many people suffer from various disabilities and many children are separated from their families. She says all of these people will require special life-saving support. She says the findings will be shared with government authorities and all humanitarian agencies. She says an analysis of the data will permit aid agencies to target their assistance where it will do the most good. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
On Friday, the U.S. Congress moved to pressure the Burmese military into ending the crisis facing Rohingyas in a bipartisan effort that proposes a range of options aimed at terminating violence against the Muslim minority. The bill would impose new sanctions, cutting off U.S. cooperation with the military, while funding economic assistance. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens.
Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. President Donald Trump has landed in Manila for summits with eager Southeast Asian leaders. It's the final stop of his Asia visit. About 3,500 Filipino protesters tried to march on the U.S. embassy. They were held back by security forces as the president's plane landed. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, ranchers in the Midwestern U.S. state of Nebraska are raising beef for tables in China, reopening trade suspended more than a decade ago during concerns over mad cow disease. From Nebraska, VOA reporter Abby Sun tells us how U.S. beef producers are changing to meet the need of Chinese food safety requirements.
Rancher Terry Beller has 5,000 head of cattle on his family feedlot outside Lindsay, Nebraska, and he is looking for more. But not just any animal will make the cut here, where cattle gain weight before the slaughterhouse.
How are you guys?
Good.
Travel long?
Meeting in town with friends selling cattle from Idaho, Beller is looking only for livestock that meets strict standards required for beef sales to China. President Xi Jinping and Donald Trump reopened that market during their first official meeting, opening a big new market for Nebraska, where international beef exports already top $1 billion a year.
China is a huge marketplace with a rising middle class that is looking for quality products like U.S. beef.
Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts says Chinese markets could be worth $200 million a year.
That's a potentially close to a 20% increase. So the work that President Trump did to work with President Xi to get that marketplace opened up has potentially a tremendous impact for our producers here in our state.
Yep, 27,890, which matches up with 56731.
But that opportunity comes with higher costs. Certifying age, origin, and non-hormone status with digital tracking from birth to packaging means an extra $150 a head. So Beller needs a higher price for Chinese beef.
I think once they get a taste of our high-quality beef that it will sell good, and we're hoping, you know, to get back to that $225 to $250 a head.
Now we're here at the Greater Omaha in Nebraska, where the live animal turned into carcass, being cut into different parts and packed right in front of us, ready to ship all over the world.
Even Nebraska meat packers must track the beef meant for China.
Where we're at now is the carcass cooler. Where we've not been is the harvest floor, and they're going to the fabrication room where they make different cuts, meaning some of these cattle might be for Europe, some may be for China, some may be for Saudi Arabia.
Once certified under China's beef export verification program, Terry Beller is betting that those higher standards will help Nebraska beef beat out global competition. Abby Sun for VOA News, Lindsay, Nebraska.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Chongqing, a major Yangtze River port in southwest China, has become the world's fastest growing tourism city, with a 14% growth in its tourism sector last year. The World Travel and Tourism Council surveyed 65 cities on the contribution in travel and tourism that they make to their economies. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, autistic children often have social difficulties. They tend to linger on the edges of social groups at school and have fewer friendships than those without the condition. But that can change if their classmates understand them and give them a chance. As VOA's Faiza El-Masri tells us in this report narrated by Faith Lapidus, an Australian mother wrote and illustrated a children's book to help kids do that.
The family dog is Hugo Alexander's best friend. The six-year-old has moderate functioning autism and an intellectual disability. His mother, Misha Alexander, says getting Hugo out the door is a struggle almost every morning.
My day-to-day life with Hugo is incredibly taxing.
takes a lot of energy just to get him ready for school.
As the mother of an autistic child, she's always felt she needed to make other children and teachers aware of his condition.
When Hugo was in preschool, I made flyers that I put into all the pigeonholes for all of his peers and their families to understand what was up with Hugo.
When Hugo started elementary school, she felt she had to educate even more people about the condition so they could better understand autism.
So I thought, that's when I'm going to write a book and I'm going to help bridge that gap so that there's more transparency between disabilities and typical children.
His name is Fergus.
Alexander wrote Fergus and Delilah, a children's book about a child who's a little different and trying to make friends. The book is designed to be used at schools and at home.
The message I hope to spread is that we all need to be inclusive, make different the norm.
The book has received positive feedback.
I haven't actually seen any, in my 10 years in the industry, I haven't seen any sort of really good comprehensive resources that are available to children, young children in particular.
Raising awareness about autism by telling an interesting, colorful story might be the first step toward breaking down barriers and making life easier for Hugo and kids like him. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
A recent report by the World Health Organization and the World Bank says climate change and pollution are damaging the health of millions every year. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us the increasing impact of water scarcity adds to the problem, and it makes the future troubling for places like Jordan.
To many Jordanian farmers, the nation's water crisis is already here.
I have 28 hectares. I used to plant 16 hectares with citrus fruits and 12 hectares with bananas. Now I plant 6 hectares with bananas because of the water shortage. Before, we used to have enough water. But now we don't have enough water to grow bananas because of lack of rainfall and of water shortage.
This is the Yarmouk River. Once an important water source for the Middle Eastern Kingdom, these days it is a trickle of water.
Believe me, the decision makers, on top of them, the Minister of Water and Irrigation, I don't believe that they sleep well every day because of the scarcity of water and thinking about water supply for all the sectors.
And a new report suggests it's going to get worse.
The climate change shown that we are in trouble in the future where all the resources will be less, around 30%. And without the climate change, we are in trouble. On top of this crisis will be the climate change in addition to the refugees, the fluxes, which make the life very difficult for Jordan to manage the water sector.
Government officials say the only real solution to their water troubles is desalination technology. But Jordan is almost completely landlocked.
And desalination, as you know, it's far away from the central part of Jordan, around 350 kilometers, which needs a huge amount or investment to transfer, to desalinate the water and to transfer the water to the governorate needed this type of water.
In addition to getting more water, taking better care of the water they have is a necessity. The government estimates as much as half of Jordan's water supply is wasted.
There is a room to use water better. We need to support the government in its effort to improve the irrigation network, improve the household utilization of water, improve the use of water in agriculture. In terms, we need to produce more from the drops of water in agriculture.
For now, the government says it is cracking down on illegal water use, increasing water prices, and will start diverting more wastewater for agriculture. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. There are many ways for you to hear our program. You can download us on iTunes and SoundCloud, but one of our favorite ways is, of course, on the radio. If you happen to be in the Philippines and at or near Adamson University, try Falcon Radio. That's where you'll find us there. And also we say hello to everybody listening in Singapore on Media Biz Radio at Temasek Polytechnic. Thanks for joining us today. You can also hear us streaming each day on VOA Asia Facebook. And we invite you to get in touch with us. You can contact us via Facebook or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Our thanks today go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer John Ellison, Managing Editor Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.